A professional change in midlife can provide a much-needed reset, at least when you're looking for a career that most closely aligns with your passion. But finding what you love, especially once you've gone down an entirely different path, can feel impossible. How do we redirect our efforts away from what we're used to and toward what we want to do?
That quote is from The Atlantic, starting over when you think it's too late. On Bamboo and Glass, we talk about the abundant possibilities of who we can choose to be, and one pillar we discuss often is career. We recently compiled our favorite bits from a 2020 series we called Career Changemakers, sourced from amazing friends and guests who've been brave enough to take that leap of faith into a new industry, a new role, a new identity for themselves.
And Tan, you've done that for yourself too recently, going from software engineering to film.
I did, but if I were to confess something to you, there are some things behind the scenes that are harder to swallow than you think. Like, we all know that the career jump itself is challenging, and that's why people always want to hear about the steps A through Z of how to get to that new career. And it's oftentimes where we most get stuck, the fear of pursuing our dreams or stepping outside of our comfort zone. But I think we don't really talk as much about the questions or sobering realizations we may continue to have for months or even years into the new venture, and how we relate that back to our quote-unquote old selves. And maybe it's actually not that different from the original career we were in.
Ooh, these are such big and juicy questions. I'm so excited to dive into this episode, especially as we bring in two guests who have appeared on our podcast before and are now in different stages of their lives.
As we talk about career, it can get really convoluted. And so I feel like some of the two main points that people talk about when it comes to finding their dream career has a lot to do with success and passion and their notions around that. Sophia, how do you relate to those two terms? Are they the same to you? Are they different? Which one more valuable than the other?
Such a great question. I would define passion as, or I would define success as having an opportunity to put a lot of my passions and skills to use. And you know, I think a lot of times when people think about success, they think about different titles and, you know, scope of impact on the world. And for me, I just want the title and scope that lets me create at the level that I want. It's less about the title and more about what the title can do for me and how the title can support me to do the type of creative work that lets me use my different skills and interests.
Yeah, I can relate to that a lot. I also then, though, find that success for me has a lot to do with passion, and that my version of success would be being able to incorporate my passions or being able to pursue my passions in some form, alongside being able to see that passion bring in a lot of income, you know, like that's a reality of something that we were taught growing up, that financial stability is really important. And so my struggle has always been making sure I can assure people along the way that this is a viable career path, while by showing them that I'm passionate about it, but also not losing that passion for myself as I'm on the way of pursuing the success of that passion.
I'm really excited to bring in a perspective from our friend Karen Mock, who is co-founder of The Cosmos. And I'm curious to get your reactions to her notions of success and passion.
Definitely success was very important to me, and the idea of a traditional idea of success. I mean, like, I completely bought into it. I'm very privileged in that I went to elite university. I went to Washington University in St. Louis. I was very much accepting that I need to get a job in consulting, and I worked in international development consulting, which is like a attempt at a hybrid, I think, of, you know, a lot of my clients were the World Bank or Inter-American Development Bank or major nonprofits. And so I felt like, okay, at least I'm helping organizations that have a mission. But I think that the idea of success in that world, which is prestige, which is a brand name, which is salary, happy hours, like traveling, business trips, like I was experiencing all of that, but in my body, I was really unhappy. I actually had a panic attack at my company retreat in South Africa with this beautiful winery. And I was like, how can I be in this space that is meeting all the criteria of success in my mind, but my body is completely disconnected? And I don't ever want to have to experience such a like strong physical sensation of like a panic attack to have to know to quit. But I think that's how far I chose to listen to like society at that time, what I thought was society's perception of success versus myself. But I didn't know what else to aim for. And I think there was an element, certainly in my early 20s in college, of just feeling lost. When I was in college, I was very keen on the idea of climate change. I did a lot of work in that space and was ultimately very disillusioned by the lack of action. And I kept coming up against that even when I, you know, started this first job. There just wasn't change that was happening fast enough. Change felt often mired in political incentives that I didn't understand. There was a generational gap. There were all these forces that I felt just no ability to shape. And I think that led to me feeling like the idea of success not only was out of my control, but also my ability to attain it would mean that I'd have to become somebody else. And I think that dissonance between myself and success from society's terms, that was the beginning of like a 10 years of feeling that dissonance.
So we best know Karen as the co-founder of The Cosmos, which is a company that creates events and experiences centering the experience of Asian women in America. Very relevant to the both of us. But before The Cosmos, she had a career before this venture, and she's just mentioned consulting and tech as a couple of things she had done before.
I really relate to what Karen said about how it's so easy just to stick with conventional definitions of success, and you often don't see examples beyond that. And I know, Athan, between us, you introduced me to this concept of the ikigai, which is a concept where you find like you will be happiest and most fulfilled doing things at the intersection of things that I'm good at, things that the world needs, things that I will get paid for.
Things that you love.
And things that I love. Great. Thank you. And I also know that there are other videos and journal prompts and tools out there for discovering your passion. I'm curious for you, as you were exploring your interest in film, what were some of the tools that you used that helped you realize that, hey, film is something that I'm interested in and might want to spend more time doing?
Yeah, I think what Karen said about listening to her body is a very underrated signal. I have done so many of those videos and journal prompts to really figure out what I want to do. And there's only so much that my mind can concoct, because my mind only knows examples of things I've already been presented with. Like, I don't know about opportunities that I just haven't heard about before, right? And so no amount of just pondering upon these prompts will necessarily get me to where I want to be. But if anything, my body can at least signal to me when I'm really excited about something, when I'm really curious about something. And that's something that I feel like I was trained to not really notice as I was growing up, because my body was not going to help me get an A on a math test. You know, it was not the priority back then. And so it's a skill that I had neglected for so much of my life. And I wish that there were more opportunities to encourage young kids to really not let their light die and to really continue to hold on to that curiosity and relentlessly pursue those when they want to.
You mentioned excitement and curiosity. To me, as someone who hasn't spent that much time listening to my body, those feel like very intellectual feelings, I guess. So how would you describe how excitement and curiosity feels in your body? Like, what, describe what that feels like so we can understand.
Yeah, I mean, I think about like Sophia, you getting really excited to talk about BTS. Like, I feel like that's a very innate bodily response, which might not necessarily make sense to other people, right? Like, there's nothing about your career or your past interests that lead people to make the conclusion that you would be so passionate about BTS. But I think the way that you light up when you talk about BTS, the way that you have more and more things to add on to this topic is a really big indicator. And I think is more of a bodily response than an intellectual one. Like, you didn't go in to be like, I'm going to bring up 5 points about BTS that people should know about them, right? And so that is a feeling that I get when I talk about like Pixar movies, and I get really excited to talk about the behind the scenes and the process. And I think that's another thing too, like wanting to know the behind the scenes of something, whether it's like how BTS created their songs or how they went about handling the concert experiences or how Pixar goes about creating culturally nuanced films in different countries. I think those are, I would say those are more gut feelings of us wanting to look into that more and be curious. Like, there's obviously the intellectual part of like, I'm curious about these stuff, but it's not, it's very different from being curious at work where I am trying to figure out a current challenge that I am solving.
Yeah. I love how you described it as like the feeling of like that rush of excitement or that rush of wanting to jump in, and that excitement of staying up all night reading about something, even if you can't quite quantify or explain the reason for your excitement. You already feel the excitement before you maybe even have words for it. That's great.
Definitely. And I think a lot of Karen's experience reminds me of some quotes from the book Excellent Sheep, which is kind of a critique, a very controversial book, but a critique on kind of like the American education system. But I feel like it might resonate with you and also some other people that are listening to this. We actually used to talk about this book when we were younger in college, I remember.
Yeah.
So some quotes in there are, "You won't be able to recognize the things you really care about until you have released your grip on all the things that you've been taught to care about. You want to make it to the top? There is no top. However high you climb, there is always somebody above you. Mailer wanted to be Hemingway. Hemingway wanted to be Joyce. And Joyce was painfully aware he'd never be another Shakespeare." And so I feel like he talks a lot about this idea that it can be so easy to focus on the next goal, but then kind of lose sight of like what you want your life to look like because of, you know, societal pressures, maybe the community that you're a part of. Everyone seems to be rising up the ranks, getting promoted in their respective roles, and you can't help but feel like, oh, then that should naturally be the next thing that I also do. And it can be so hard when we don't step outside of our comfort zone to explore other opportunities. And that's such a scary thing to do. But I too really believe that you won't be able to recognize the things you really, really care about until you've let go of them and have allowed space to care about those things too.
Yeah, I was inspired by the part of Karen's story where she realized, she kind of put two and two together, and she was like, oh, you know, community is actually a through line, a theme that's been really important to me throughout many different life experiences. And community isn't something that was like a conventional measure of success to her, but wasn't really sure about how to integrate it or how to pursue it further.
I think community was not something I took seriously about myself, which goes back to what you're saying about like not listening to my body. I honestly was a little bit desperate because I moved to San Francisco without knowing anybody. And I quickly was like, wow, like I have to meet friends and I have no network. And part of it was fueled by this, still these ideas of success, knowing that network is honestly what gets the door open in so many cases. And that, you know, my parents are immigrants. They live in South Carolina. They don't know anybody. Like, they're not gonna be able to help me. And so I was in the survival state. That definitely is something I didn't really acknowledge early on. Like, it wasn't just a pure altruistic, like, I want everyone to come together. There was some self-serving element to it. And I have to, like, be honest with that because I think it's a reason why people try to come together in this day and age. But what I found was that what was possible in terms of connecting with people and the energy that I felt, the way that I felt like myself, it wasn't often like who I was in the workplace. Like, I think in the workplace, I was actually quite submissive. And I think that was very much like a performance that I felt pressured to play at work, especially in mostly, you know, white spaces or male spaces. But in the community space, I think I was passionate about just being able to feel like myself and yet never really valuing that as much as still like who I had to be at work. It honestly wasn't until I went to Asia and I had a job then that was almost completely contingent on my ability to build community. It was working with an investment accelerator firm, and my job was to fly to a country in Asia every 10 days and build a community of entrepreneurs and creative people, bring them together. And that was really the merging of like my professional life and my side experience or passion. And I honestly was the most fulfilled in that role that I had been to that date. However, the like work environment, the pay like wasn't amazing. It wasn't sustainable by any means. And yet, again, the dissonance, right? Like I found this thing that feels really right for me, but I actually cannot survive. I remember very distinctly telling myself, like, this was fun for a year, Karen, but now you need to go and get a real job and be like a real professional. And that's the only option you have. So I was still, you know, telling myself that what I love to do wasn't a career opportunity. And I went and got a job at a very successful startup, and I was very fortunate. But I continued to do community, but this time focusing on Asian American identity, very much influenced by my time in Asia. I don't think it was until I met my co-founder, Cassandra, did like a number of MVPs, so to speak, like these retreats we were doing, saw the impact, saw that money could be made potentially. But I stayed in my full-time job for a year. I don't think it was until the summit where we actually made like five figures that I was like, okay, like now is the time where I can like sustain myself. I waited very long because again, I was still unsure about the ability and agency, and even like feeling some guilt, I think, to be able to say, well, I'm gonna quit my job and do what I love. Even when I had quit and was working on it full time, I was still like, is this like a good idea? This doesn't look like success. So it's just some way of saying that the dissonance remains a part of me even today. Besides financial concerns, I was worried about falling out of love of my passion. There's this really great piece of The Alchemist by Paulo Coelho. He talks about how so many of us are chasing our dream, but when we're right in front of it, we'll walk away from it because A, the point of life is to chase your dream, right? And then B, we don't think we deserve it. And I think I felt both of those things.
I think that's so cool that Karen was able to try out community work in a job that she was at. But she, before going into the cosmos, had a lot of fears around taking that leap, as I'm sure anyone can relate to when they're considering a career change. And it's a reason that many of us might resonate with as well, which is kind of different from what Excellent Sheep was saying, which is, what if you fall out of love with your passion? I'm curious, Sophia, if you, like, what is a passion that you would not consider pursuing a career out of because you're scared to fall out of love with it?
Oh, piano, for sure. I would have definitely gone to music school, but one thing I was afraid of was that I would turn what I love into a chore, and I would then lose the thing that I loved the most in my life. So that's why I didn't go to music school.
Had you had experiences prior where piano did start to feel like a chore? And so that you had examples of that that made you more fearful about pursuing it professionally?
A little bit. I think there was a lot of talk in high school about, oh, how piano in certain competitions would be helpful for you to get into college. And even though I didn't internalize that too deeply, the thought that I should be spending more time on being strategic with competitions definitely made me a little like have these sort of like icier feelings towards piano, if that makes sense.
Yeah, definitely. I relate to that. But eventually Karen did take that leap to try to do community work, which led her to the cosmos. Karen and her co-founder Cassandra met in 2017, and they were both really tired from their corporate lives. They were very tired from the emotional labor that they were needing to endure in their respective jobs, and they were also really tired of feeling alone in talking about these experiences. And so a Medium post about the experience then became the first Cosmos retreat, where 20 strangers came together. at the peak of the cosmos, they had 11,000 plus Asian women getting together to meet and support each other in community. And I myself am a grateful recipient of a lot of their gatherings and the heart that they put into every interaction and the community that came together. I think something that you'll hear Karen talk about is how uncompromising they wanted to be in their values, which is so admirable in any sort of business where you are a POC and you are needing to ask for resources from people, but you also have a strong mission statement where you really want to stay aligned and not make too many compromises. It reminds me of our episode with Lily talking about the ethical sellout. And this is an example of a company that did everything they could to not be an ethical sellout. And that's so brave and admirable of them to make sure that they hold on to the heart of the company.
I think I also bought into the idea that the moment you're doing your passion, it's always going to feel like the movies, you know, where the montage plays and the like synthy pop song comes on and like the protagonist is having the best time of their life. Like I was waiting for that moment and it did not come. So I always felt like I was doing something wrong. But I think it was more the like idea and vision of success is probably oversimplified in it's definitely oversimplified, I think, in today's culture. I didn't want to be a founder for I think a lot of the reasons that I saw my peers around me wanting to be a founder, which is the reputation, the prestige, the attention, the especially for female founders. I mean, this is like girl boss age. I was very dismayed by how much you could get by with just seeking that attention but not having any substance to what you were building, like not building something people truly wanted or loved. Again, I didn't fit the profile of like a conventional founder in this space or in tech. I had like an identity crisis basically the entire time that I was a founder. And I think I kind of overcorrected by putting a lot of pressure on myself to have like real substance to what we were creating. And at the same time, I think with community or with any kind of artistic endeavor, like the metrics aren't like an app, right? It's often intangible, like connections, people coming up to you and saying, hey, that was really meaningful. I think I was looking externally for a lot of the validation for this choice. I guess I felt like having the internal conflict would keep me like ethically in line, as long as I never took for granted that I was a founder or that I just deserved this. Honestly, one of the things that I felt most isolated in as a founder and pursuing my passion was all of these like ethical, moral, philosophical questions that would come up around how to be like a leader, especially a reluctant one who doesn't want it for a lot of the things that maybe are more easily given. And then, you know, I accepted some of those things too. I was like, okay, like I'll be an influencer. Like I'll like take some free stuff from a brand. It helps my business. And then feeling, you know, morally disgusted by myself. So I feel like a big trend and or pattern in all of this is even when I was pursuing my passion, I still felt like the ideas of success were not aligned with who I was, especially in terms of like trying to make money to stay alive as a company. I felt the same powerlessness as like the broader like capitalist system that we're in. I felt that in conversations with brands and organizations that were larger than us. And it was honestly heartbreaking. This time, the consequences were more severe because there are people on my team that I can't pay or people that I have to let go if I don't make a potentially like compromising decision. And that was actually a lot harder to be exposed to that level of stakes than, yeah, when I was an employee and I could just kind of walk out the door, maybe find another job. Like that wasn't an option when I was a founder. But I am this kind of person that is very frustrated if what I want to see in the world doesn't exist. Like that was the whole reason why I created the Cosmos, was like, there is no space for Asian American women. Like this should exist. I'll just make it because I'm unfortunately a character flaw, very impatient to like wait for someone else to do it. And I still feel that now, like even now that it's over and I have a job again and I'm thinking about stories, I'm like, these stories don't exist. I guess I'll just have to write them or make them and create them. And then it's like, are we doing this again, Karen? Like, are we going into this reluctant leader spiral? Like, why do you have to do it? Why don't you just sit back and relax? And that could be success for you. Like, you, by all objective measures, could just have your day job and relax. Maybe, like, have a nice brunch, go to the park, play with my dog, and not think about wanting to change things. But isn't that me also accepting conventional success? I think that's the question that I have for myself now. But I want to do it differently. You know, I don't want to have to go and that's even why I'm reluctant now about writing, which is another passion of mine that I think even with community is even more precious to me. It's my first love. It's the only thing that I've ever felt like, always consistently felt like had meaning and purpose to me. And to then try and pursue it professionally is terrifying for all the reasons we've discussed. But I have to believe, or I have to do the work to say I've changed. Like, I'm not going to approach it the same way that I did with my previous passions.
And it's also tiring and hard to maintain when there are so many systems around you that make it hard for you to live according to your values. So building the Cosmos was a huge leap of faith. And then there was a second leap of faith, was to even begin considering going back to where she once was, which is an environment that she very intentionally left, and left for very good reasons.
I think the decision to go back into tech was very much motivated by a recognition of just what I need to be stable as a human being and not to feel ashamed about it, right? I think there is this shame and guilt of like, well, I was doing my passion, but now I have to go back. Like, I think part of it is the way I perceive myself, because I think I wanted to be the kind of person that I definitely was like, don't have to go back in tech. I'm going to just do this thing I love the rest of my life. It's going to be amazing. That's literally, I think, what I wrote in my Instagram post when I quit. So like, I set myself up for that expectation. And that's unfair to me, right? That's the version of me that was also very much like black and white, A or B, it's passion or nothing. And I don't think life works like that. And I don't think I work like that. So having some like sense that, and necessary humbling, that passion is not a singular path. And if I continue to remind myself that the pursuit of this job, the pursuit of like writing and storytelling, even the continued pursuit of community, just comes from a place of me making meaning in my life, that actually feels like a much kinder message to myself than you need to be successful in all of these areas. Like, I might not be, I think. I'm actually actively trying to do things that I don't feel successful in so that I can practice comfort with this feeling. It takes a lot to stomach it. And there are days where I don't feel like I did anything good. And I just have to be like, it's okay, Karen. Like, this feeling will pass.
I have a very complicated relationship with success. I love success. Yeah, like, I want success so badly. And everything I've ever done in life was so that I could be successful. Whether, you know, when you're young, grades and school and friendships and everything, like, I just wanted to be successful and have all the things I wanted and be good at it. And then in ministry, I just always cared about being successful in leading people, in creating safe space, in being an encouragement to others. It was always about like how good I could be. And if I didn't see the signs in other people that I was doing a good job, like, I would immediately get discouraged. And so when you ask like, what is kind of the relationship for me between success and passion? Like, it's all kind of jumbled up. And I guess in a way now, in my late 20s.
You're like passionate about success.
Yeah.
At some point.
Yeah, totally. Like, oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm having like an epiphany right now. I've been so passionate about success that I don't even, for a long time, I didn't even really know what I was passionate about. I was like, as long as I'm successful, I love the thing. Who cares what the heck it is? I'll do that thing because I'm successful at it and I feel really good.
That was such a earnest and sincere or like reaction to your question. You know, success is something that we all want, but it's also this kind of like, I don't want to say it's like a dirty word, but it's kind of like a, you don't want to like show too much that you want success, but like, you know, so many of us do want it.
I agree. I'm so glad we got to capture that moment. And if her voice sounds familiar, it's because we've also had Serena on our podcast, and you may remember her from episode 110, Redefining Self-Worth Through Serendipitous Digital Connections. Ooh, this feels so full circle because on that episode, we talk about her quarter life crisis, which is a topic she covers the most on her YouTube channel.
I would say the main theme of my quarter life crisis has always been my search for significance. I'm a very idealistic dreamer type of person. I see the world with a lot of feelings, emotions, and I really care about the differences that we make and the connections we make and just the purpose that we have in this world. So in my quarter life crisis, I feel like I've just been constantly trying to search for my significance and my purpose in this world, like hoping that I'm not just lost and that I actually have like a place for me. And that's actually why I kind of latched on to my Christian faith and the church community for so long, because it was at the time a space where I felt 100% belonging. Like I felt so significant and purposeful there, as if my giftings, my unique personality and quirks was like a perfect match for this community. When I let go of that, I didn't know where else to fit in. When I was in IT support, when I was in the eye clinic, I just kind of cast those things aside, already assuming like, I'm not a perfect fit for those, or those are not a perfect fit for me because I'm so emotional. Like I'm so like, I have so many things I want to share in life. Like, why am I just stuck at this IT job or stuck at this eye clinic job, you know? And I think it was kind of like a mixture of my search for purpose, significance, and also my insecurities that led me to really kind of base my self-worth on these jobs and titles I hold, rather than being so secure in myself that I should have the agency to define who I get to be in any space I'm in.
Ooh, search for significance and a place to belong. That is such like an inner child thing, I feel like. There are so many experiences that we've all had where we felt left out or we felt insignificant, maybe in comparison to other people. And so I love that she talks about how those are themes that she really cares about, but that's not as necessarily a specific passion like piano or community building. Mm-hmm. And so what do you even do if you don't have a specific passion? I definitely experienced that when I was in college for a long time, and college was supposed to be the era where you decide on your major and your major is supposed to help decide your career. And I felt like I was running around in circles constantly because I didn't know what did light me up the way that it other like community building lit up Karen or piano lit you up, Sophia. And I really relate to Serena's struggle of not knowing where to look. She's coming from just this earnestness of just wanting to be somewhere and wanting to be part of a crowd or part of a group of people.
Yeah, a lot of people might respond and say, oh, you don't need to find belonging at work. Like, that's just capitalism trying to, you know, convince you that work should be your whole life. But I've actually gone through that reflection too, you know, in this job search that I've had for the last couple months. I have reflected on the question, there are so many places where I can find passion and belonging. Why do I want to find that in my work? And my personal realization is that work provides a lot of the structure for you to pursue your passion, right? There's a structure of showing up to work at the same time, having meetings, having teammates built into the structure of work. And so I think it's really valid to look towards work as one source and like one really viable source of significance and belonging and community.
It's kind of a necessity like school. Like you are expected to go to school and that is a guaranteed space that you're going to be in for quite some time. And so it makes sense that it would be worth investing that reflection to make sure that you end up in a place where you are really happy with what you're doing and the people that you are around.
one day I got an eye infection, so I had to go to a local eye doctor. And during that appointment, the eye doctor afterward was like, "Hey, are you looking for a job?" And I was like, "Wait, yeah, I am." And so he's like, "Hey, we're looking for a front desk receptionist. They have to be really thoughtful and detail-oriented and just kind of be like the face of the clinic when customers are coming in." And I was like, "Okay, yeah, great." So I sent in my resume and pretty much was hired right away because they were looking for someone really quickly. And so I spent the next year working as the front desk receptionist for an eye clinic and learned a lot just about organization, about customer care, learned a lot about office management through that. But still, at the time, I would say my head was somewhere else. Like my heart was somewhere else. I wasn't present with the job. I didn't really appreciate it for all that, all the experience it gave me. Job searching has always been that big struggle for me. So back when I first graduated, I was like, "I don't know. I don't want to apply anywhere. I'm so scared. Like, what if no one wants me?" And so when the eye clinic came, I was just so relieved and almost like relieved to tell my friends this story so that they don't have to hear about my struggles with trying to put myself out there or like trying to be good enough or trying to reach for a job. The fact that I just got that job kind of like as a miracle continued this pattern of me feeling like I am not capable of pursuing something that I care about. I can't get what I want, but if someone is just willing to offer this chance to me, I can prove to them that they made a good bet on me. I never was able to form my confidence and believe in myself enough when I didn't really actively seek out a job. I'm starting to really embrace the beauty of following your passion, even if you're not successful. Now I am trying to figure out what it feels like to just do what I love and to really enjoy the process and the struggle and just do things because it brings me so much joy, even if it doesn't feel successful at all. I am very passionate about relationships. Oh my gosh, I really love a deep, intimate friendship and just the connection that happens between that, the exchange of stories, the opening up of struggles, being there for each other, supporting each other during dark times. In my search for significance, I was like, okay, well, I love connecting with people so much. And I do feel that I have this gift to connect deeply with people and to make them feel comfortable. What can I do with that? And that's when I was like, oh, maybe I'll be a pastor. That didn't work out for me. And so then I was like, what else could I do? And so especially when the pandemic began, I was exposed to a lot of like life coaches in the Instagram space. So then for a while, I was like, ooh, maybe I could be a life coach, because life coaches really, they work with people and they hear your story, the things you're trying to work on, and they just kind of like support you and ask you prompting questions to lead you to that next step or to give you space to lead yourself towards that next step. And I thought that that was really cool and empowering, and I wanted to do that. And I don't know, like, it's so hard now to articulate what the blockage was, but I remember when I was trying to maybe do life coaching, I went back and forth between several things. I was like, oh, okay, so some life coaches can get certifications through like a 1 year or 6 month program. And for some reason, there was just this resistance for me. I don't know if at the time it's because I had, oh yeah, actually, I do remember. It's because I was jobless at the time and I just felt so scarce financially and so embarrassed and kind of ashamed that I didn't want to ask my husband like, hey, can we invest into this $10,000 certification program so that I can learn to be a life coach? Like, my pride or my, I don't know what it was, like I just felt so bad to do that. So I knew at the time I wouldn't want to do certification. So then the only other way to do it was another route that many life coaches take is they become a life coach without any certification. Their credential is their experience. And it's fine right now because the life coaching space is not governed or regulated by any governing body. So technically anyone can be a life coach, even without any sort of certification. So I knew that, but there was resistance there too. A part of me was like, I just don't know, like, if I'm fully equipped. Like, I know I can have great conversations, but who am I to say I can be a life coach and really ask people for money in exchange for what I have to offer? I think once money came into the picture, I just wasn't confident enough to really turn that into an actual career. And so, yeah, I was just like stuck in that tension for, I think, like half a year of being like, I want to be a life coach, but I don't have the confidence to do it. But I also don't want to spend money on it. So I was very stuck. Now I'm focusing less on life coaching because I think with life coaching, you have to really be in a place where you're ready to give and to see yourself as this guide and leader. And for me, I realized that although I had seen myself as a leader for a long time, especially in church spaces, I didn't actually have the deeper confidence and self-worth to like sustain that. I think I just honestly relied on titles in the church a lot. And if I took away the title of pastor or leader or life coach, like if I looked inward in myself, I'm actually still working through a lot of confidence issues. And so now I'm really focusing on just sharing my story more often, whether it's through content creation or in my friendships and connections with others. I'm in this season of just being more honest with where I'm at and just letting my story shine and be present, even if it means I'm not exactly a leader right now or confident or giving anything to people. I think I'm just existing and hoping that this existence and this sharing of my existence has some sort of impact in some way.
When I think about all the amazing comfort and guidance that Serena offers in her YouTube videos, it is just so jarring to me that what she can offer the world is like probably one of the most important things that anyone can offer to someone else. That feeling of comfort, that feeling of safety, that feeling of like encouragement to pursue something that you love. And yet this important, amazing thing that she offers, there's like not a really good structure or like method for her to offer it to more people. And so I think like her explorations with faith and with life coaching, they're probably the first two things that I would think of too, when if I wanted to put this passion, you know, and put it to use more. Yeah, as I was listening to her story, I was like, girl, I'm like just as stuck as you are. I really don't know what else you could have tried.
Yeah. And since you brought up her YouTube journey, I think this is a good time to dive deep into it. We'll link her YouTube channel below because she has had a lot of content that many of you might resonate with. But let's hear her perspective on how she views her YouTube journey.
When I first planned my YouTube channel, my dream was to be very open and to just almost like shock people with how open someone can be. I wanted my YouTube channel to be a space where people are just like, dang, vulnerability is actually really awesome, and I want to do it too. And I am very proud that I feel like my YouTube channel really has done that for a lot of people, especially as I opened up about my quarter life crisis and just all the windy turns I had to take. It's been so cool to see the comments in the YouTube videos being like, oh my gosh, like I'm totally going through this too. Like life is so complicated. I don't know what to do next. I think when I posted my first quarter life crisis video, one of my friends from my church communities, they reached out and told me that even at age, I think like mid 40s, they're still figuring it out and they're still trying to figure out their next job. And I was like, yes, that is so good. We need to hear more stories like that so that we don't fall into this illusion that your quarter life crisis only can happen in your early 20s, or it should only happen once and then you should get over it and just have your entire life figured out. That would definitely hands down be my proudest moment to this day and something I continue to strive in my YouTube journey. When I first wanted to like follow my dreams and do content creation or maybe even a little bit of like life coaching endeavors or whatnot, I looked at the people around me, whether it was the life coaches around me or the content creators I saw on Instagram. And I saw a lot of them taking huge risks in terms of leaving their job and then pursuing content creation or life coaching full time. And beyond that, I feel like there was this, there were many articles and posts written about how it's like, how I quit my corporate job and worked for myself, right? There was just a lot of that story happening of people, I quit my job and I work for myself. I have financial freedom. I have like freedom to travel wherever I want. I was like, this must be the only way I get to do it in order to feel the most free and the most fulfilled, because seeming like everyone else around me seems to be the most fulfilled when they rage quit their job and go into content creation or life coaching. And so I did that. Like my previous job that I had, I basically just rage quit. Like within a couple of days, I just was like, I can't do this anymore. I quit. And then I was like, now I'm going to do content creation again, and I'm going to do life coaching, and it's going to be great. I'm going to be so free. And this time I'm more confident, so I can do it. And pretty soon after, like probably just a month in, I was like, oh my gosh, I can't do this. Like, why did this seem so easy to the people around me? Like, am I just weak? Like, is there something wrong with me that I have such a big passion for this, but I can't seem to make it work full time?
So Serena went from being really passionate about success itself to being passionate about how lost one can feel in their pursuit of passion and success. Both Karen and Serena at this point have kind of tapped into this societal culture that we are kind of coming across with, especially with TikTok, of how easy it seems to follow your passion and how successful one can be by pursuing their passion. There's like the girl boss era. There is the era of people who just wouldn't have it any other way in the world, in quotes, because that they were not happy in their previous career and now they are living the life of their dreams. I think it's so easy to look at the end result of where someone has ended up in. And of course, everyone should celebrate that they're successful and that they were successful by pursuing their passions. But we do get to miss a lot of the harrowing challenges that they do experience as they're getting their business up from the ground, or they are starting something that no one has any idea about.
Something to mention as well is I compared myself to the lives of others without really acknowledging key differences that we may have. So I compared myself to a lot of people who perhaps were single or weren't in a married relationship yet, who had kind of that luxury to do whatever they want and to be and to not make any money, and it wouldn't really affect anyone but them. And I wasn't willing to take an honest look at my own relationship and really to really see Alan and to see Alan's story for what it really is. And that's that Alan is someone who really does feel very worried about finances often. And that's a part of his upbringing. That's a part of, you know, his story. But income and finances is very important to Alan. And it's something that he can feel very unsafe in if he doesn't feel like he's bringing enough income. And so during the time that I stepped away from work and tried to pursue content creation, he tried so hard to be a supportive space for me and to make me feel as comfortable and as loved unconditionally as possible. But it was so obvious that he was uncomfortable. Like you could tell he was so anxious all the time and like so nervous and like hoping I could be successful soon so that he doesn't have to continue to be the only one bringing in the income. And it was just really tough. I tried to ignore it for a little bit because I saw all these other people doing it this way. And I was like, man, we have to make this work. Like, it has to work. But finally, the biggest breakthrough moment for us was when we had a really honest conversation with each other. And I just asked him, like, do you feel safe? And he was like, no, I feel really like scared all the time. I feel really scared that I'm here kind of taking care of our family and you're out pursuing your dreams and trying to figure it all out. And like, I'm just hoping that one day when you find your dreams and do all the things you need to do, that you can come back and like be with me again and like be in this marriage again. And that was just like so heartbreaking to witness because I love my husband, obviously, and I want him to feel so safe. But in me trying to search for my significance and my purpose and my confidence, I had really kind of neglected his needs and almost felt like he shouldn't need that. He shouldn't be afraid of money and because everyone else feels so free with money. Why do you need to be like this, right? I had been kind of feeling that way for a while. And finally, in that moment together, I was like, I can't do this anymore. Like, what is it worth to me to find my passion if the very person I love the most feels so scared around me? Yeah, so that was a huge turning point for me, a huge reason why I went back into job searching. And the coolest thing was, prior to that moment, that breakthrough conversation, Alan had always tried to like encourage me to get a job. And I would always get so annoyed because I'm like, no, I want to pursue my dreams. Like, why are you trying to encourage me to get a job? I would just feel so almost resistant and annoyed at that solution he was trying to give me. And he would always encourage me to get a full-time job as opposed to a part-time job. And I would also kind of be like, why are you encouraging me to do that? Because I see other people getting part-time jobs to support their full-time passion. And I would just be annoyed. But after that breakthrough moment, I realized that I don't want solutions from Alan because I just end up getting annoyed and feeling like I don't have freedom to make my own choices. But instead, I want to hear what Alan needs from me. And so I asked him, I was like, what would you need from me in order to feel like really safe financially? And so we had a discussion where he shared about kind of like a ballpark of what kind of income he would feel, what kind of income as a family he would feel comfortable with. And from there, I felt a lot more agency to actually be like, oh, okay, so that's the amount of income that makes you feel safe. Like, I can do that. How would I do that? Oh, okay. Like, I would probably need to get a full-time job. So I felt this agency to finally like come up with a solution for myself that makes my partner feel so loved and safe. And it had nothing to do with him telling me to do it, but it still ended up being the same solution anyways, but I was actually happy with it. Even though, yeah, like in many ways, it doesn't match with my passions for content creation and soulful conversations, but I'm just so happy about it because every single day I bring in this income and I'm like, yes, like I'm actively making my partner feel so safe in this household. And that brings me so much joy.
I love that Serena touches upon a more personal aspect of her life, which especially because it can be vulnerable, but it's so cool to hear her come to this realization that providing for a family can be a huge sense of purpose. And actually, it is something that probably kept our immigrant parents going. How did you view your parents, Sophia, as they worked? Do you feel like their purpose was to provide for your family? And then two, how do you view, and if so, how did you view that growing up? And how do you view that now, especially hearing Serena's perspective?
Yeah, that's so interesting you say that because my dad was the primary, he was the primary person bringing in income. And if I had to guess, he seemed, his passion for family and for our safety and for our future, that was a bigger, like that was his source of passion. And maybe for us, if we were ever to ever have a family, if we were to ever have kids or people who we are financially supporting, maybe that would become a stronger sense of passion and purpose for us. But for now, that's not like a really big factor in our lives.
Yeah. And I love how Serena touches upon how she had to realize that there are key differences between her and a lot of people who do go and pursue their passions. Like she mentions that a lot of those people are single, but Serena is married. And I think that conversation that her husband was so brave to share with her makes sense that it's a pivotal point because it's where Serena kind of comes to a realization that there are a lot of differences in that. She has to first take into account her personal experiences and what she wants her life to be versus what she wants it to look like to other people and what other people's lives look like to her.
When I really look back at everything, I don't actually care that much about a thriving career. I think I just wanted to feel like I belonged somewhere. It wasn't worth it if it meant me sacrificing my relationship with my husband. And so now I'm like, when I'm real with myself, I'm like, you know what? At the end of the day, whether I do content creation or a corporate job or whatever the heck I do it in my career life, I'm so happy that I get to just come home and just be with Alan, you know, spend some time cooking dinner, talk about the future, talk about what made our days good and bad. Like, I kind of just really like that part. And career could mean more or less to me, if I'm really honest.
We've gotten to hear Serena's and Karen's stories so far of the thoughts and questionings that have come up with them taking leaps in their careers. And where, I'm curious, like, where are they now after this whole emotional roller coaster? Like, I'm hoping, do they get to catch a break from all of this huge amounts of unlearning and relearning about success and passion?
I think my mental health has been the best it's ever been, just period. I don't think I've ever been this happy or healthy in my entire life. However, I would also say that even in the midst of being like really happy, really stable and content in this work, of course, there are still times that I kind of really wrestle with this overall journey I've been in, this desire to pursue something more, to tell deeper stories or to share my experiences online and to connect with others. Like, there's always this yearning there within me outside of my 9-to-5. So there's definitely this like sense of mourning and grief that comes in that. It's like, wow, who knew that even something so joyful can also still be filled with grief? Like, life truly is so complicated. And content creation was never just fully fun. It was filled with anxiety and pain and discomfort and loneliness. And getting a job is now filled with joy and also definitely grief and mourning and still a yearning and a hope for more too. I've actually been trying to create more YouTube videos and expressing my creative energy there again. And similar to that theme we talked about earlier with our relationship to success, now I'm really trying to use my YouTube journey as a practical playground for me to just experiment with anything, with my creations, with my ideas, with my videos, and just try to like put stuff out there, even if I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't know if this is successful. Like, I'm kind of even cringing watching this. So I don't know if someone else will cringe too. And like just giving myself the freedom to just play on my YouTube channel has been very fun.
The journey I've been on is accepting myself. And it's an asymptote in a way. Like, I think I'll always just be headed in that direction. But right now, I feel like I am very openly pursuing all the things that I'm interested in, but I'm very bad at. Like, I'm doing contemporary dance. I'm doing a performance. I'm terrible. Like, I'm the worst person in class. No idea why I go. But I'm doing it because I love it, and I've always wanted to do it. Climb, like, I'm not a good climber, like, but I'm like, oh, this is like fun, I'll just do it. I'm not trying to be the best, but I just do it. I go to yoga, also not amazing, but I like feel good in my body when I do it. I write sometimes, and I think I cringe every time I read my own writing. Like, I'm just not the best at anything right now, and it's amazing. Like, to just be like, I'm just doing stuff I love without being good at any of it. But it came up actually in my dance class by my choreographer. He was like, this should just be a space where it's okay to not be okay. And how to sit in that feeling. Because I think I am actually the most authentically who I am that I've been in a long time. But it actually has nothing to do with feeling successful, which is wild. I'm like, maybe this is the answer, that I am just not needing the external validation and success. And I can still be really aligned with myself and really accepting of myself. So I'm just trying to have more of that feeling. And I guess I'm proud, even though I, you know, struggle with that word, that I am choosing that consciously every day.
I think I'm also taking away this feeling of shame that both of them had when it came to changing their minds. Mm. And I would want to take with me that it's okay and actually really brave to change your mind, even if you feel like you've already changed your mind. It's funny because I feel like we're in this generation where we do reject this idea of working at the same company or the same job for the rest of our lives, but still there is this expectation or connotation when it comes to leaving something before you've fully, quote unquote, like marinated in it or fully have given it a chance. And I think we can offer a lot more grace and compassion to people when they are making those choices, because they're making those choices knowing that it is not a popular choice to make. And I think we can offer a lot more grace, and also grace to ourselves when, if we ever find ourselves in that position, and and remember that career is not necessarily the only passion that we need to have. There are a lot of passions out there in the world, and a dream career is amazing, and a dream career can change every month, every day, for every single person.
I think kind of building on what you said, I'm really proud of them for going through this difficult thought process, or even, like, you know, building up the guts to consider making a change. Because I think, at least in my own life, the longer that I stick with a certain path, the more I fear all the things I'm going to lose and throw away if I move. And so my big takeaway from this is, if I feel this inkling to explore something different or to leave what I have now, it's probably less painful and it's probably more beneficial and fruitful for me to just explore that feeling as it comes up, rather than suppressing it and continuing down this path, and just hoping that the questions never come back, because they will come back. And I think they're just going to come back even louder, and it's going to be even harder for me to, like, acknowledge those questions the deeper I am on a certain path.
Yeah. There were so many layers that we ended up peeling back through their journeys. We peeled back conventional notions of success, what passion even means, how passion can change over the course of the years, how to find that joy in a world where there are so many systems working against you, and you can't help but feel like they are working against you at all points. So why even bother looking for your passion or pursuing your passion, as well as changing your mind and being able to even show up and not feel like you're saving face in front of your loved ones. I am so thankful that Serena and Karen were able to share their stories with us. And I hope, listeners, if you've ever had that what if in your head of what kind of career you want to have and whether it's different from the one you have right now, I hope you're able to listen to this and realize that there are so many layers that you can unpack for yourself too. And there is absolutely no shame or embarrassment that comes with going back to where you began, or realizing that the grass isn't always greener on the other side, and realizing that your passions are ever evolving, because you are an ever evolving person too. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. I hope you can send Karen and Serena some love their way as they go into their new ventures. And if you enjoyed this conversation, please let a friend know and share this episode with them, that we're on every podcasting platform. Please consider giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And if you want to get in touch with us, we're on TikTok and Instagram at Bamboo and Glass. And with that, we hope you have a great rest of your week, and we shall talk to you next Sunday.